and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on England as we break down one of football's great managerial rivalries, Pep Guardiola against Jose Mourinho, or of course, Manchester City against Tottenham Hotspur. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Joel Parker. Joel, welcome.
Hello, Erik. Hello, listener. It's a pleasure to be back on speaking about quite this big game in the Premier League.
Yeah, pretty big game, and it's really good to have your British accent back on the pod, very much in line with
it's
the
game. It's not the most romantic of British accents, let's put it that way, but yeah, pleasure nonetheless.
I don't know too much about British accents, but you know a lot about football, so that's great to have you on the pod. As we always do, we start with the lineups of Manchester City against Tottenham Hotspur. So you want to take City or Spurs? Go ahead.
I will take Man City, if that's okay. Man City with a couple of big omissions, Kevin De Bruyne and Fernandinho both missing due to thigh injuries. The way that we call this Man City lineup, it's a 4-3-3, but they don't really look like that in the build-up, which we'll get into. So starting off in goal, Ederson, the defensive line of Cancelo, Stones, Aymeric Laporte, who came in for Ruben Dias, who's often started there this season, and Zinchenko at left-back. Rodri was back in the team despite injury concerns in the week. He had Bernardo Silva and Ilkay Gundogan as part of the midfield, and the three of Phil Foden, Raheem Sterling and Gabriel Jesus, who came in for Riyad Mahrez after that Liverpool game.
Yeah, so why do you think he went for Jesus as the striker here, flanked by Foden and Sterling? What could have been the motivation for that?
I think the main aim here was to try and get a bit more potency up front against the low block, something that I think Jesus provides a bit more than having a false nine or a centre midfielder kind of pushing up in that position that have been there in recent weeks for Man City.
Yeah, and I also think like you have to distribute the minutes a bit, right? I think you can't play Jesus on the bench all the time in the big games because he is a pretty integral part of their future, I think, as the successor to Aguero. For Tottenham, they played in a 4-2-3-1, as has been so often the case in Mourinho's career. Lloris in goal, obviously. Defense right to left, Tanganga on the right. So that was maybe a bit of a surprise because he's defensively more stable than Doherty, maybe.
I believe that's his first game Premier League as well this season.
Yeah, it was quite a surprise. Also, Alderweireld benched. So Davinson Sanchez and Eric Dier as the centre-backs. You could also play maybe Davinson Sanchez as the right back and then Alderweireld in the center, but Tanganga got the nod ahead of everyone else. And Ben Davies is always at left back. Had a pretty hard game against Foden, but maybe we'll come in to speak to that. And the double pivot, Højbjerg, ever since he came in, has been a starter in that double pivot. But now what's new is that Ndombele is playing next to Højbjerg in the double pivot. Mourinho first only trusted him at the number 10 position. But now he's dropping deeper in recent weeks, which is a good thing for their build-up anyways. Yeah, so 4-2-3-1, the three players behind Harry Kane. I had the most questions about that, actually, Joel. Kane starting at striker is, of course, a no-brainer. But the three players behind him was Son on the left, Lucas Moura as the number 10, and Lamela on the right. So I think Son on the left, maybe to profit off of Cancelo's high position as the right back of City and to make use of the space in behind. I think that was done because of that. But then the other two spots taken by Lamela and Moura. Like, can you make sense of that? Like, for example, if you have Bergwijn on the bench and Dele Alli and maybe Moussa Sissoko, who's really strong in counter-attacking situations. Like, how do you explain that?
I think it's quite interesting because both are sort of known as wingers. And just going into the game a little bit more, you saw a lot of Lamela carrying the ball forward and not having that option inside that you would kind of expect from Lucas Moura. So I think the idea really was to go a lot more wing orientated when they were transitioning. But this really wasn't the case when Spurs were building in these occasions.
Yeah, I think you play those two guys because of what they offer in counterattacks, but what we saw is clearly not the case. Let's start with the first half. So in recent weeks, there has been a lot of talk about João Cancelo, who's on paper a right back, but he actually plays as a central midfielder next to Rodri most of the times. Joel, you noted something today. Like, what was the role of Cancelo today and how was it different compared to the last few weeks?
So Cancelo usually moves in to be part of the double pivot with Rodri in that build-up. So when Man City are building, they often look to play in a sort of a 3-3-4 kind of shape when they're passing the ball. But this wasn't really the case. Cancelo kind of stuck towards the right a lot more. He wasn't necessarily hugging the touchline, so to speak, as your usual fullback, but he was kind of in the middle. So he had occasions where he did drift in and build, but mostly was, I guess he was kind of playing in that halfback role. And as a result, City built in a 2-3-5, which is different as compared to recent weeks. And what I thought was interesting from Man City's build was that they didn't really have to shift into different gears to kind of bypass Tottenham. The passing was quite slow. It was methodical. The rotations and the movement were still there when the ball would reach the wings. But overall, Man City were slower and quite comfortable when building, I thought.
Yeah, I think what was most notably was how easily they moved the ball, and not only outside of Tottenham's defensive block, which you would expect, but also they were so easy to get inside, you know, and especially on the right side, I thought, they were so easy to get inside of the box. And I think that had a lot to do with Cancelo's role, which was slightly different. And I think, yeah, if you casually watched it, you don't even pick up on it because it was only 5 or 6 yards more to the right and maybe at times a bit higher. But today it surely showed.
Yeah, for sure. And Man City benefited from that quite a lot. I thought that they often got into a lot of third man moves down that side, often had an overload on the channels. Having said that, Tottenham was sort of in limbo, I thought, out of possession, where they didn't really know whether to press or hold their shape. So when you're watching Tottenham defend, that compactness and that solidity that they often have wasn't there. So Man City were capable of just flowing possession through quite easily without having to speed things up, so to say.
Yeah, I'd quite agree with you, but I also thought that the basic defensive stuff, like who picks up a runner if they go deep, if City do a rotation on the right, what do we do? I think that was just subpar, and I didn't expect that from a Mourinho team. Like, okay, we know that Mourinho nowadays in possession, when his team have possession, we do not expect that to be at the top level anymore. But now it's also on the defensive side. And I think that's really worrying if you're a Tottenham fan.
One thing that I also noticed as well is when the ball was flowing from left to right or right to left, so to speak, when the ball would go into space out wide, the Tottenham players out of possession were all transfixed with the person on the ball and not the potential runs that were being made in the half spaces, which I thought was quite interesting because, as you say, when we speak about Tottenham defensively, we think of them as a very proactive team that see these patterns and see these movements and just nullify it instantly. But this wasn't really the case. So you saw a lot of Man City getting the ball towards the sidelines and then playing it back inside quite easily.
Yeah, they had a lot of what I used to call penalty area entrances. Like they entered the penalty area of Spurs quite easily, but their first actual great chance of the match ended up in a goal, which happened in the 23rd minute, which was a penalty kick. And I'd like to say two things about that. One, it was easily given for me. Like it was not 100% penalty, but okay, it was a penalty. But that's just one of the things that happens when the opponent enters your penalty area so often. Then you get exposed to these kind of 50-50 situations. Okay, is it a good tackle or not? And in this instance, the penalty was very easily given. But that just happens to you if you let them in so easily. So of course, Mourinho after the game says, yeah, it was an easy penalty. I agree with him. It was an easy penalty. But the actual problem here is why do City in the first 25 minutes enter your penalty area so easily? That's the real problem that was not really discussed after the match.
Sorry to cut you up, but it was such an easy pass from Laporte into Jesus as well. And instantly from there, you can see Tottenham just really reactive. I know that they deal with the phases, The first couple of phases where Man City were sort of, they couldn't really pass through, so we're just exchanging on the edge of the area. But then you see Gundogan make this pretty well-timed run in the half space, but Højbjerg let him go very, very easily in this situation and gives away quite a silly penalty on his behalf.
Yeah, there's a good case to be made for Gundogan as player of the season for City, especially with De Bruyne out with injuries so often. But yeah, there has been a lot of talk about City's penalties because they've missed quite a lot. There has even been some talk of Ederson, the goalkeeper, taking it. But it was Rodri who stepped up and he scored the 1-0 for City, totally deserved.
Ederson tried. I'm pretty sure the cameras cut to him on the halfway line and someone directing him back. So
that was strange for me, Joel, because you expect at the top level that a discussion like that is held before a match. Like, okay, if we get a PK, who's going to take it? Will it be Ederson? Will it be Rodri? I know Ederson would be quite unorthodox, but still, like, you do that discussion before the game and not during the game. Rodri steps up to take it and then the goalkeeper comes to the halfway line, hey, can I take it? That was strange for me.
Lloris almost saved it as well. It's worth pointing that out. He gets quite a big hand onto it. It's quite a weird penalty to watch because it's really low and bouncing on the floor. And then suddenly Lloris gets the hand on it and it ends up in the roof of the net. So it was quite an unorthodox penalty, I thought.
Would have been better for the match and for the storyline if Rodri would have missed it. But anyways, he scored it. And to speak of Rodri, he was quite important for City in that first half, but throughout the match, but in the first half especially. Because we know if Tottenham don't have the ball a lot and they depend on quick counter-attacks, then we know that a key tactical element in the game is City's counter-pressing. What do they do if the ball is lost? Can you talk a little bit about how important Rodri was today in City's counter-pressing and what he did to stifle a lot of Tottenham counter-attacks?
Rodri, as well as the two wing-backs as well, in terms of Zinchenko and Cancelo, I thought were really effective at squeezing the space when Tottenham tried to transition. Speaking of Tottenham transitions, we often, as you say, associate Mourinho as being this really well-rehearsed manager when it comes to counter-attacks and getting into decent positions all the time. But I thought Tottenham's counter-attacking was really, really weak. When they would turn over the ball, it would lead to often Eric Lamella having to carry the ball forward just to spark something. But it was always him versus the world, I thought, when he was carrying the ball and having very, very little options. One thing also I thought was quite interesting with Spurs was that there wasn't really a person behind Rodri in the centre of the pitch that could drive forward and threaten the centre-backs. You often saw Harry Kane out on the left of the attack three with Son. I think the idea of this was to expose Cancelo coming in as this inverted wing-back, but that wasn't really the case. So you saw a lot of Tottenham attacks that were led from Lamella, so to speak, and no one in the middle making a hard run past the centre-backs or trying to pin them deep. So when these occasions occurred, it was very easy for Man City to shut these attacks down and make their attacks incredibly narrow. And eventually Tottenham just did not build or have any shots from their transitioning.
No, so we pointed out a lot of tactical elements why City were the better team in that first half. And they had a lot of chances after the 1-0 as well, especially in the 5 minutes before the break with some good late runs from Gundogan, but they didn't score. So we went into the halftime with 1-0 for City. Shots 9 against 2. They had 63% possession, City, which goes to show their dominance. Second half. To Jose Mourinho's credit, he did try to change something. He didn't think, okay, this is going well. No, he changed it up. He actually introduced at halftime Sissoko for Lucas Moura, and that meant Sissoko would play in the double pivot with Højbjerg and Ndombele
in his position as the number 10, as he has been used a lot this season. Two things, Joel. One, I think Ndombele was disappointing in the first half when it came to counterattacking. You expect him maybe to pick up the ball, dribble past one, and then launch Son into space, but I thought he was anonymous in that first half, Ndombele. And the second thing is, I think Sissoko in the double pivot is just not defensively solid. Like, he's all over the place, doesn't hold his position. So I thought it made sense to me, but it made Spurs defensively weaker for me as well.
Which is such an interesting point, because Højbjerg and Sissoko were the two that started the game in November. Mm-hmm. And that was when we were kind of introduced to the wide central midfielders from Mourinho, which was really good at shutting down them corridors back inside when Man City had the ball. So it's quite interesting that just in the matter of a couple of months, Sissoko and Højbjerg starting together in the second half makes them a bit more exposed.
Yeah, true. But we did saw a difference in style in that first 15 minutes of the second half, because believe it or not, Spurs actually had more possession and more passes in that 15 minutes after the break. That was wild when I saw that. I thought, okay, that was different.
It was really wild, but didn't necessarily mean that their circulation was very good. One thing I thought was quite interesting was the positioning of the centre-backs when they were building. Mm-hmm. It was quite noticeable in goal kicks where you had both Dier and Sanchez sitting virtually just on the edge of the six-yard box. So they was constantly trying to encourage Man City to really press high, but they didn't. They sat in their medium block. They sat in their 4-4-2, and Tottenham were just incapable of playing through that block. One thing that has to be said was that I thought the positioning in the middle of this build-up was quite suboptimal. Ndombele and Lamela were having to drop quite a lot next to Sissoko, who, when Tottenham were building, Højbjerg would sit to the left of the centre-backs. So usually you had Sissoko in possession with zero passing options forward. And this led to a lot of just circulation going up to the full-backs, Man City closing down the space, passing back to the centre-backs, and then up towards the opposite channel. And we saw quite a lot of this at the start of the second half from Tottenham, who were just incapable of even really reaching the final third.
Yeah, but I think if you start to play more passes and more build-up, then you should not push Ndombele closer to the striker. Then you should play him closer to the centre-backs, because he's basically the best build-up player of the squad.
So yeah, very true. That
was odd to me. Anyway, it didn't work. We got City's second goal 5 minutes after halftime, with Gundogan picking up yet another goal. I'll be honest, Joel, I didn't think Gundogan was able to play a role like this as he does in the City team, which is very versatile, but he does it great. And this was another showing of that, with a fantastic goal with a late run again.
It's quite interesting, because if you watch the goal back, he's really holding on to that space just on the edge of the area for quite a long time before he makes his run. And it's so well timed. I mean, he has Sissoko and I think it's Sanchez as well with their backs turned. He runs in the blind side, perfect time in front of the other options that are also in the area for Tottenham to defend. And Gundogan, very, very effective goal. And I don't think that there are many midfield players in the Premier League, or maybe even Europe right now, that can make such penetrative runs just like Gundogan does right now.
Yeah, so City two goals up, and after that, well, that for me, after that, it was like game over. Like, I thought City, which is an obvious choice, they dialed back their pressing a little bit. They were just moving the ball with less ambition going forward. They actually recovered their possession stat a lot after that initial 15 minutes, and yeah, it was basically game over after the 50th minute, which is sad in a game like this, which you want to go either way and to be close, but it was not like that at all.
Yeah, for sure. And as you say, the game state just did not change at all. I didn't see any change of intensity from Tottenham. They really didn't look like they wanted to get back into the game. And it was quite similar to the first half, where they were just stuck in limbo, not really too sure what to do out of possession, and Man City controlling the ball comfortably, moving the ball comfortably. still in autopilot, really. And just, it felt alarming to me how easy it was for Man City to hold on to this game without any issues.
Yeah, so I'd like to point out two more things before we go into the takeaways, because basically, tactically, nothing really happened in the last 30 minutes. The 3-0 was a great goal, actually. It was a... Everyone who saw the game will remember this, but I still have to include it because it was so wonderful. Ederson sprayed a pass over 70, 80 yards into the feet of Gundogan, who made another, almost like a second striker run. It looked quite bad on Davinson Sanchez, who was defending Gundogan in this situation, but I think the centre-back who was more at fault was Eric Dier, because he was so out of position, he could not even help to recover after Davinson slowed Gundogan down in the first instance, and Gundogan just showed his great form, took a couple of touches, and it was in the back of the net. And it looked very bad on Sanchez because he fell flat on his head, literally. He just fell flat on his face, but I think Dier was a lot more at fault there.
He was left to sort of just defend so much space. What I thought was quite interesting, it looked so un-Pep-like. Mm-hmm. At first, with this big thumping drive from a goalkeeper and just loads of space in behind, it just didn't feel like a Guardiola goal to me. But looking back, you see the run and you see Ederson initially look up and see Gundogan's making that vertical run into space. So I thought it was just a really, really clever goal and a pet hate from everyone that is associated with analysis football knows that if you play such a high line with no pressure on the ball, you're basically asking for trouble. So
yeah, and it's something Guardiola added to his teams, like a little bit more that directness. Okay, if we are 1v1 at the back, just go for it. And to be honest, you need a goalkeeper like Ederson to pull it off. Like, for example, you support Everton. Yeah, if you say we want to do that as well, yeah, maybe you don't have the goalkeeper for that, you know. I support Ajax. We now have a goalie who's 38-year-old in goal. Yeah, maybe he doesn't have the passing range to pull it off, you know? So it's easy for us to say that you should do that, but you need a goalkeeper who can execute it, and Ederson did it fantastic.
We'll suddenly brush past that why Onana isn't in the team anymore.
Yeah, but we'll move ahead because that's all painful. The second thing I wanted to point out is that Spurs actually created only one genuine opportunity in the entire second half, which came from Gareth Bale, a substitute. So that was odd to me as well for a couple of reasons, because A, you don't expect him to impact the game, but B, you don't expect Spurs who are trailing the game to have only one opportunity.
I'll give credit to Bale. It was actually his best bit of footwork I've seen from him for about 2.5 years, I think. Yeah, it was quite a nice... Yeah. Quite a nice way he kind of breezed through, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 defenders to create a little bit of separation. But yeah, other than that, you know, it just speaks volumes about Tottenham on the transition and just having zero patterns, zero options, and just relying on individual brilliance in order to just try and get something, anything out of attacking, really.
Yeah, so 3-0, game dusted, last 10 minutes, basically nothing happened, so we're done with the match part. Let's move into takeaways. One thing people who listen to this podcast probably know about the concept of expected goals. If you look at this 3-0 win for City, but you also look at the games where Tottenham got a result in the past year against City, the chance distribution, it was not so far off of the last two meetings. Like, if you look purely at the chances, this game went more or less in line with what we saw earlier. But the difference this time was that Spurs did not have magic going on with creating goals out of thin air, and City actually took their chances. So in essence, it felt like a different game today because of the of the passive behavior of Spurs. But if you look purely at the chances, it was not so far off of what we have seen in the past year.
I think Pep learnt his lesson and Jose didn't. I thought Man City were quite passive and cautious, especially in that November match. They were really just incapable of sort of playing through and didn't really know. I mean, they had a couple of chances, yes, but they were also quite one-dimensional. There was a lot of reliance on Kevin De Bruyne to just try and create something in that previous matchup. And you'd think that, you know, you're looking at the quality of attempts and the volume of attempts that Tottenham had, and you would think that, right, we really should have more fluid counter-attacking moves. And this really wasn't the case for Tottenham. It wasn't like that they weren't having chances on the transition and these opportunities. But overall, I think that Mourinho was expecting to have that three defensive line that Man City often look like they do have when they're building up. I think he was expecting that, which is why you did see Harry Kane often drifting out towards the left and Son in the same channel. But dealing with a four is completely different when you're counter-attacking forward and transitioning.
Yeah, I agree with you on both points. And Joel, if I think about this game, like, I think football, in essence, it needs these kind of narratives of Pep against Mourinho and two great managers squaring off with their teams. And if we look back at the history these two guys have, with Pep getting the Barcelona job in 2008 and not Mourinho, and then Mourinho going to Real Madrid, and then the 5-0, but in the last season, Mourinho gets the championship instead of Pep. And in the Champions League, they met so often. It's a bit sad to me that now this is like a game between England's best team and maybe a team that is 7th or 8th in the standings, and that it has dropped off so much. And that's a bit sad to me. I don't like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it also plays into the times that we are currently in at the moment, where there's a real high rotation of games. Players have been asked, a lot of them, physically. That's highlighted in the pressing stats alone. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's a shame that the intensity has really dropped off from this fixture. Even when we was looking at, you know, City versus United, and Mourinho was having the United job.
Can you remember 2016, like the hype around, oh, Pep is at City and Jose is at United, same city, best managers in the world, that's going to be a great rivalry. And then
even at the time, it was still first versus second.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a remarkable change, as you say. And even in the game, just going back to the game in November, Tottenham won that game and went top of the table. And that was late November. And even within the space of, you know, 4 months, it's such a drastic change. So hopefully with I know these two are playing each other in the League Cup final. Yeah. Hopefully that brings back some intensity and some aggression. But
you know, if we analyzed calmly the data in November, then we could see that Spurs were so efficient with their chances, they could not keep that up for an entire season. Like, there was this stat that every third or fourth pass from Kane to Son became an assist or something. Like, it was just an overperformance on their expected goal part. It was unrealistic to continue, you know?
So I thought everyone
who was shouting for Tottenham title charge at that time was just a little bit unrealistic.
It was quite cute. Let's put it that way. But looking back, as you say, with the quality of shots, you know, we were still thinking of Tottenham as being this really good team on the counter-attack that doesn't need to have loads of possession. They can just have 4 or 5 well-rehearsed patterns of play and just have Kane and Son, who are arguably two of the best counter-attacking players in the world, potentially, maybe. I think you can make a good argument for that. But you saw them too, just, you know, they're just deprived of ideas, and there's the patterns are just not there.
Yeah, it's sad. I've jumped off the Mourinho bandwagon for a long time. Anyways, City take the 3 points. Liverpool lose at Leicester. Yeah, it's not good for us because we like it to be a bit more exciting, but I think this pretty much dusts up the City Championship, doesn't it? Like, am I saying strange things here?
It's secretly good for me. I will take Leicester beating Liverpool. But I don't see anyone that can match Man City right now. I think that They're breezing through games. They're so comfortable. Their positional play is excellent. And, you know, credit to teams like Leicester and Man United. They're certainly good elements that they have, but none to the level of Man City right now.
No, so it might be a case of the best team winning the league. Anyways, there are four other leagues we cover at Between the Posts, so that's good for us. Maybe we can look at Italy for an exciting title race, for example. Maybe at France, with Paris Saint-Germain not exactly finding their stride under Pochettino, former Tottenham manager, who knows. What I do know is that we will be back next weekend with a new match to analyze. Thank you for listening to this podcast. There's one thing I'd like to say to all the listeners. Reviews. We need reviews on Apple, on the Apple platform. Yeah, if you would be so kind to do that, leave a review. And if you leave a match in that review, then we will review that match for you, if it's from the top five leagues of Europe. So if you would like to do that, it would be ever so kind. Joel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back next week.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. Bye-bye.